This is Heidi Bray and George Bray and Richard Brown, and we're here today with Elliot Brown in Milton, Washington. And the date today is the 13th of November, 2019. And Elliot's going to tell us some stories of his adventures in the Marines.
I was in the Marine Corps. I joined in 1948 and stayed in until 1952. I signed up originally for three years, but Harry Truman liked me so well, he gave me an extra year. And I tested for various jobs in the Corps and had some tests that I knew something about. I worked in my father's garage for many years, and I had taken welding courses in the Tacoma Vocational School. I went to the recruiting station and told them what my background was. Oh, we got tests we can give you. Okay. So first they tested me on gas welding, and I passed every one of them. Then they tested me on arc welding, and I passed every one of those. So I said, well, how about the automotive? I said, well, let's give it a shot. I passed every one but one. But anyhow, the young fellow giving the test said, well, what do you want to do in the Marine Corps? I said, motor transport school, which seemed like a natural. And so he said, boy, you sure ought to make it. Well, after I took another test, if I could tell the difference between dots and dashes, I ended up in radio school. So when I got through radio school, they sent me to high-speed radio school, and ended up at Camp Del Mar, Area 21. God, what a memory. Area 21 at Camp Pendleton. Mm-hmm. And we were not at the camp. We were across the road between the road and the ocean. A little thing like the ocean, you could forget that. So I went through two courses there. I went through radio in school and high-speed radio, which put me on a ship that was the flagship for the FIB pack, had to do with the amphibious force. Mm-hmm. Down the sea to, ended up in Martinique, French.
Wow.
And
in the Caribbean. Martinique's in the Caribbean?
Is
Martinique in the Caribbean?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's a French protectorate. Mm-hmm. And next thing I know, we're back in San Diego. They let us off the ship, and the ship went to Martinique, as I said. And it was going to Pearl Harbor for overhaul, and they decided to, there were I think 12 of us. They let us off at Camp Pendleton. Well, inasmuch every one of us was exercising our skills in Morse code. And so they said, well, you could go to Camp Pendleton, and they gave us to an infantry battalion, and we always had company on the radio van, because the kids who were radio men, they maybe once a month have a little exercise. Well, we were working all day, every day, so we'd have an audience. Oh man, he's good. Oh, you're listening. So we had a lot of fun there. Ship came back to San Diego. We went back on the ship. Immediately, we left for Korea.
Mm-hmm. What year would that have been, Elliot?
That was the year 19... I think it was 1950. The Korean War started.
Okay.
We ended up in Yokosuka, Japan, not very far from Tokyo. What little time off we had, we zipped on into the big city, checked things out. We were fascinated how clean, not only Tokyo, but every other city that we could actually see. It was amazing. You know, not a cigarette butt on the street. Oh, nothing in the way of litter. Whoa.
Yeah.
So, got back on a ship, headed for Korea, and made our way to Incheon. You go from the ocean through a long channel and stopped at the tidal gate in Incheon, Korea. They had a tidal gate that when the tide was up, you were sent up to the gate. We never got inside. Somebody sent us right outside the gate. They didn't like it. We were there, and that's a 30-foot tide. So somebody calculated how much vertical distance we made. And in that time we were there, 30 feet, and you can accumulate a lot of vertical travel up and down.
What were your radio men responsibilities when you were in?
Taking up.
What were your radio men responsibilities in Korea at that time? What were you listening
well,
to?
Well, we were listening to being a flagship. We were the liaison between forces ashore and forces at sea.
At sea, okay.
So we were there at your daddy would remember you and the invasion of Incheon by the Marine Force, and did a lot of communicating with those folks.
Mm-hmm.
But a couple of these little things that I feel I have to report to my listening public. what the Army officers used to do at the end of each month. Now, these are Army officers. At the end of each month, they'd help a ride on a ship. The next morning, they got off, put in for 2 months of being in a combat zone. Draw 2 months worth of pay, get off, and went back to the officers' club, probably. Hmm. We went at, we went from there back out around Korea. On the ocean side, where Incheon Reservoir was. Mm-hmm. Your dad can remember that. He's got a wonderful memory, Eddie.
You're attributing not, him a wonderful
good,
memory.
Not as good as yours,
Eddie. So where was the Incheon Reservoir?
It was on the outside.
On the...
Incheon Reservoir was at where China and
Korea,
North Korea, met.
Where they met. Okay.
Yes.
And how long were you there?
I don't recall that particular detail, but I remember this one and I will never forget it. We were out on the ocean side, as I recall, just kind of stood by briefly and helping the Army guys get a combat pay. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was bad. Well, we got to the outside. I can't remember. It was Ham Hung or Hung Nam. And laid offshore. And we're copying the people at Incheon. And I was in communication on a daily basis with a marine operator on the shore. And we used to, every day we had a time that we'd meet with each other on the air, of course. And it started out with their small cooking fires, is what the operator called it, on the other side of the river. Now, just kind of figuring things out for myself. When I started getting messages from this particular operator, he was sending in clear text, which you wouldn't do in that kind of a situation. So I felt it was pretty important for that information to get to the beach. Mm-hmm. Whoa, in a small cooking fire.
And who would those cooking fires would have been?
On
who?
The other side,
on
of,
the other side
river.
Of the river.
That's okay. Who that was.
So
they
that
were,
would have been the
Chinese.
Okay.
Oh, sorry, Japanese folks. And so the next day, the next day I got a message few more cooking fires. Until finally the Yalu River froze over. And guess who walked across the river?
Who?
Well, we're getting, as time progresses, we were getting more and more cooking fires across the river. Well, the Army did such a poor job at I'll tell you the rest of it. They did such a poor job that they almost got court-martialed. George, you may remember that they had very little information from that particular spot, but the official report that you find in the Army details much later, when they said, well, we didn't know they were there. Oh, well, eventually they were hiding under the trees with their cooking fires, with their hiding. All they must be toasting marshmallows. I don't know what they're up to. So then, as the year progressed, what they actually did is waited for the Yalu River to freeze over and, oh, let's take a little stroll. So
they strolled.
Well, what? No, and then the next thing. Well, they didn't know they were there. Oh, they crossed the river in three bridges. Now each one of us with a 50 caliber machine gun could hold up a bridge. Oh, they came across the bridge at night. No, they didn't. So this is what the Army reported ultimately.
What was the consequence of those? Of the Chinese coming across the river.
They raised hell with the people on the other side, shot a lot of them. Oh, well, they just came across some of the bridges. And I've been carrying that around my head for a lot of years, sweetheart.
I bet you have, yeah.
And I don't know why or when I wrote the river, when I got the information and compiled it, we whizzed on out. 12 knots, Rich, whizzed on out of there. And so all that went up the ladder, the Army communication ladder. And that's what's in the official Army report. The Army was there, but they did such a poor job. They could have been and should have been people court-martialed. So that was what I wanted the world and the people that are listening to this. I wanted them to know this. It just was incomparable. It was uncalled for. It was a big fat lie, in other words. And when they came out of Chosin, they had Army people there, but they had done such a poor job that if I were in charge, I'd have had at least four generals court-martialed. Just unbelievable.
What year would that have happened?
That was, well, it might have been still 1915.
Okay. So it would have been the winter of 1950?
Yes. Yeah. So that, just as I say, it irked me all these years that it was officially in the Army records.
Yeah.
That the Army did everything they could once they found out there were people across the river.
Where did you go after that in your Marine Corps time?
I came back to the U.S. and transferred. No, I didn't. I transferred off the ship to Camp Pendleton as the communications chief for 1st Battalion, 9th Marines, mm-hmm. which was an infantry outfit. And of course, oh, I got to tell you the rest of the story a little beside the pole. Paul wanted me to be sure and tell you a couple stories on the ship.
Okay.
We had not the commanding officer of the ship's detachment, Marine Signal Detachment, and each Marine detachment had, I think there were about 12 of us, and we had an officer who was the next down from the Marine commanding officer. The exec was a carouser and a fighter. And so ultimately, the skipper of the ship, who was a teetotaler, he had two men picked out to be his guardians. They couldn't get off the ship without him. Well, we had a nice snowstorm. And so we were on deck after Marine called at quarters, but on the ship was, the same thing as taking roll. And he was already on walking quarantine. So it snowed. And we were up on deck going through some drill of some sort. So we were standing on deck in our spots where we're supposed to be. And we said, "Hey, gang, snowstorm, yippee." So we were up there throwing snowballs up on the flag bridge. And we were down about three decks lower. And so we got a really good snow fight. Well, out comes the carouser, and he started giving us the business. But this is not military conduct, blah, 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 blah. Well, in the meantime, I had a corner of my eye. The skipper was there, and just very quietly walked back around the flag bridge, and I didn't narc on him. I just kind of let my flies pull away.
Did he have a snowball in his hand?
Oh, sure. He was just having as much as fun as we were. So, here comes the executive officer, non-military conduct, blah, blah, blah. So, a little later on, I had abandoned ship drill. And so all the officers were on the life rail and the peons were on the inside. So we're standing probably parade rest or something ridiculous. And across, he didn't know it, but across the bridge there was a little plot. So we're standing behind the officers with their backs turned to us, and all of a sudden a big fat snowball comes across. Wham! Paul liked this. It was one of his escorts. His name was Dr. Pump. He was a ship's chemist. And the ship's all the equivalent for a preacher of
a ship. The chaplain. Chaplain?
Yes, the chaplain, exactly. And so we whipped around. And of course, the lieutenant looks around. He knew one of us had done it. Well, by the time he got turned around, we turned around. And the dentist, who outranked the chaplain by at least three ranks, he was standing across with a big grin on his face. And this guy, the carouser, he just knew it was one of us. Well, by then we were all turned around and looking back at him, and he was looking at us. About that time, the skull turned to a grin. The dentist had smacked him in the back.
With a snowball?
With a big snowball and a big grin. He took out all of my wisdom teeth.
Oh, on the ship?
On the ship.
Wow. Not too many people can say they got their wisdom teeth all pulled at sea.
Well, and I'm pretty sure, accidentally, I think. Oh, I'm sure it was an accident. He dropped one of the teeth down my throat. His chairside assistant was a pal of mine. We had a little midnight music and booze party.
Uh-huh.
I had the access to the music. I was a watch chief. And so I got this call on the ship's interphone. He said, "Gee, I sure enjoy your music." And I thought, "Oh my gosh, we've had one of our radios that we could tune and find dance kind of music." So this guy said, "Gee, that's great music. And yeah, I want to thank you for it." And I said, "Oh my God, that music is still on." Oh yeah, and I thought, oh, it shouldn't be. But the thing of it was, it buzzed through my head that each compartment had an individual shutdown, so if they didn't want to hear the music after taps,
they could turn it off.
Turn it off. Mm-hmm. So I said, oh well, okay. So when you want to get down, wherever he was.
You're okay. Continue.
When you get done, whatever you're doing, come on down. You can select your own music. Really? Yeah. Can I bring a buddy? Oh, sure. Well, the buddy was a messmate. Well, let's see. Here's the radio. Here's the music lover, and here's the mess man. Well, the music man was the dental assistant. And this man had access to grapefruit juice.
Was that a special treat?
When you put a little...
Oh, okay.
That was the midnight music and...
and cocktails.
Cocktails, yeah. And that was his boss was the guy that smacked the lieutenant in the back with a big snowball. Oh, that was a riot. I thought it pulled. That was good. We had a detachment first sergeant, and I was in San Diego awaiting transfer, and we were both there awaiting transfer on the same kind of ship. I recognized him from radio school. And he said, "Hey, I heard one of these ships has this guy who is a brig warden at Pearl Harbor. And brig wardens were not particularly liked."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I said, "I know what ship he's on. He's on mine." So we went on, or I did. I don't remember why I was ashore, but there I was. So we go back to our ships, go to Korea. And every morning we would have called quarters, which is like the calling the roll on the beach. And so we had our little meeting, and we were by then in Korean waters,
mm-hmm.
combat zone, and so this little squatty, sour-faced guy, he decided to make a command decision. So after we got through taking a roll, he says, "I understand that some of you people are not standing your watch." And of course, the radio men, among other people that had watches, would trade watches. You know, we're in a non-combat zone in the real truth of it. But yeah, he could call us that. So he was blah, 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 blah. And the gunnery sergeant, who's the next one down to from the first sergeant, and he just come off watch, and he was still in the same compartment with the rest of us peons. And as soon as he hit the deck, he was up on the next deck, which was the encryption room. So I said, "Wait till you hear this." And I told him, I said, "Our friend next deck up came to a command decision." So I told him. He never even got all the way down the ladder. He turned around and shot back up the ladder a couple of decks. And I told him, and he just went. The next thing I know, the commanding officer of our little group, one ladder up, I don't know why I was going up, but I had a reason. And as I passed the detachment door, it was throbbing. It was the manger. So next thing I know, the first sergeant, who never stood watch, go to early chow. He was off for the day, you know. So he was telling that master sergeant, says, I just got off watch. The gunnery sergeant just got off watch. And, you know, six of the men just got off watch. From now on, you will stand watch from early chow to watch in the message room or typing messages. That's when we're at shore, or I mean, at sea. And he says, that will be every night that we're at sea. That's it. You're on watch.
Wow.
And he says, and when we're at anchor, and we send a shore patrol, shore patrol duty, you're on shore patrol duty every night. So he wasn't off any night, either one or the other. If we're tied up, you're on the beach. Mm-hmm. If we're not tied up, you're in the message room. And every night, of course, the rest of us had regular watches, so we weren't on watch, we just kind of did whatever. And they have little cocktail parties.
Cocktail parties at sea.
And
like a cruise.
Yes. Of course, we're one.
You're okay. I'm just checking the time. Elliot, how many years were you in the Marine Corps during the Korean War?
4 years.
And were you...
That's 3 plus 1.
Oh, okay, 3 plus 1, because of the president liked you so well. Yes.
I think it had something to do with that.
I'm sure. And were you drafted or did you enlist?
No, I enlisted.
Mm-hmm. And tell me, we're close to being done today, but tell me why you chose to enlist. Because the Korean War was about to happen, right? Or had it already started when you enlisted?
Well, the... North Koreans were headed well into South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And the Marines went in when they were clear down to Busan, which was a big city in South Korea. The North Koreans were about to encircle them. They call it the Busan perimeter. Yeah, they were just closed in. And the South Koreans just didn't have enough to take care of their situations. So the Marines went in and took the North Koreans all the way back to the Yellow River.
Uh-huh.
And the North Koreans, under the pretense of being afraid of invasion, and when that it had started at all, and that's when there was the
Tell me why you enlisted. Why did you make the decision to enlist in the war?
Well, I'll tell you, if you want to know the truth, I'll tell you what happened. My dad had high hopes. There were 6 boys in the family. And he had high hopes of having at least one of the boys a partnership. our dad was the worst businessman, a very fine mechanic in a lot of venues. The only problem with his being a businessman, he never once on his own sent out a statement. So when you came to pick up your vehicle, you were supposed to pay cash. Good luck with that one. If you got out the door, you hadn't paid, chances are you wouldn't. He went that way for years. So I got out of high school and worked for my dad. And I looked around, I said, there's no end to this. So I just quietly went down to the recruiting station. But one thing they didn't know, and I didn't know, I had a missing disc between L1 and L2, mm-hmm. and disc L2.
Okay.
And they let me enlist anyway.
They did.
Which I thought, I didn't know it at the time, and obviously neither did I. And so I think I'll just do this. Mm-hmm. At least I'll get paid for it. And that's pretty much how it happened.
And then 4 years later, the war was winding down when you were finished with your service. Was the Korean War winding down when you finished your service? No. Okay.
No, it lasted a long time.
Yeah.
There was never an official stoppage, if you will, of the Korean
conflict.
Well, it was, what did Uncle Harry call that? It wasn't a war, it wasn't a
police
this
action.
Or that.
Wasn't it?
I think so.
A police action?
Oh my goodness, my sweetheart.
Oh my goodness, look at that. Lunch is arriving, so we're going to discontinue our Marine Corps stories for now.
No,
to be continued. Any final thoughts with your last 2 minutes, Elliot, about Elliot's adventures in the Marine Corps during the Korean War? What was the best thing that your time in the Marine Corps taught you? What was the thing that...
Well, I enjoyed high-speed telegraphy. That was my specialty. And when we got to Korea, we were given assignment to the ship's company, so that made us official members of the ship. And I just I enjoyed telegraphy and the messages I got from various places. One time I was trying to reach Washington, D.C., and we were a long way from it, and I kept trying to call them, and no response. So I got a response from Fort Lauderdale, France, or was it, under the control of France. And we would do that if it wouldn't get the job done officially. We would figure out our own little plot. And another thing we used to do, Heidi, was when we were on the West Coast, the banana boaters had a special swing, we called it the banana boater swing. They had a kind of a rhythm, and they would shorten the letters or lengthen them. And it was a little